I would never be able to explain this to him. Never be able to make it right again. I gunned the engine and peeled out. Edith reached for my hand. "Pull over," she said as Charlie and the house disappeared behind us. I kept my eyes on the road, trying to control my face. "I can drive." Suddenly, she was sliding over my lap, her hands on the wheel, and her foot pushing mine off the gas. She moved into the space between my leg and the door, then shoved me over with her hip. The truck didn't swerve an inch, and she was in the driver's seat. "You wouldn't be able to find the house," she explained. Lights flared behind us. I jumped and stared out the back window. "It's just Archie," she said. She took my hand again. When I closed my eyes, all I could see was Charlie standing in the doorway. "The tracker? She caught the end of your performance. She's running behind us now, about a mile back." My body felt cold. "Can we outrun her?" "No." But she sped up as she spoke. The truck's engine whined. My plan wasn't feeling so brilliant anymore. I was staring back at Archie's headlights when the truck shuddered and a dark shadow sprang up outside the window. Her hand clamped over my mouth before I could finish shouting the warning. "It's Eleanor!" She dropped her hand to my knee. "It's okay, Beau," she promised. We raced out of town, headed north. "I didn't realize you were still so bored with small-town life," she said conversationally, and I knew she was trying to distract me. "It seemed like you were adjusting fairly well, especially recently. Maybe I was just flattering myself that I was making life more interesting for you." "That was below the belt," I confessed, staring at my knees. Those were the last words my mother said to him when she left. It would have done less damage if I'd punched him. "He'll forgive you," she promised. I closed my eyes. "Beau, it's going to be all right." I looked down at her. "It won't be all right when we're not together." "It's only a few days. Don't forget this was your idea." "That makes it worse. Why did this happen? I don't understand." She stared at the road ahead, her eyebrows pulling low over her eyes. "It's my fault. I shouldn't have exposed you like that." I grabbed her hand. "No, that's not what I'm talking about. Okay, I was there. Big deal. It didn't bother the other two. Why did Joss decide to kill me? There are people all over the place, people who are a lot easier to get to." I glanced over my shoulder at Eleanor's shadow. "Why am I worth all this trouble?" Edith hesitated, thinking before she answered. "I got a good look at her mind tonight," she said in a low voice. "I'm not sure if there's anything I could have done to avoid this once she caught your scent. It is partially your fault." She looked at me from the side of her eye for a second. "If you didn't smell so ridiculously delicious, she might not have bothered. But when I defended you, well, that made it a lot worse. She's not used to being thwarted, no matter how insignificant the object. She thinks of herself as a hunter, as the hunter. Her life is consumed with tracking, and a challenge is what she loves best in life. Suddenly we've presented her with an amazing challenge, a large clan of strong fighters, all determined to protect the one vulnerable element. You don't know how euphoric she is right now. It's her favorite game, and we've just created the most exciting round ever." Her tone was full of disgust. She took a deep breath. "But if I had stood by, she would have killed you right then," she hissed with frustration. "I thought I didn't smell the same to the others as I do to you." "You don't. But that doesn't mean that you aren't still a temptation to every one of them. If you had appealed to the tracker, or any of them, the same way you appeal to me, it would have meant a fight right there." I shuddered. "I don't think I have any choice but to kill her now," she muttered. "Corrine won't like it." "I don't like it," I whispered. She looked at me, surprised. You want me to spare her? I blinked. No. I mean, yes. I don't care if she dies. I mean, that would be a relief, right? I just don't want you... What if you get hurt? Her face went hard. You don't have to worry about me. I don't fight fair. I could hear the tires cross the bridge, though I couldn't see the river in the dark. I knew we were getting close. How do you kill a vampire? I asked in a low voice. She glanced at me. Her eyes were hard to read. When she spoke, her voice was harsh. The only way to be sure is to tear her to shreds, and then burn the pieces. And the other two will fight with her? The male will. I'm not sure about Lauren. They don't have a very strong bond. She's only with them for convenience. She was embarrassed by Joss's behavior in the meadow. But Joss and Victor, they'll be trying to kill you? My voice was raw, like I'd sandblasted the back of my throat. Stop. You focus on staying safe. You do whatever Archie tells you. How am I supposed to not worry about you? What does that even mean, that you don't fight fair? She half smiled. It didn't touch her eyes. Have you ever tried to act without thinking of that act first? Aside from involuntary muscle actions like breathing and blinking, it's terribly difficult to do, especially in a fight. I'll see every single thing she plans, every hole in her defense. The only one who can hold his own against me is Archie, since he can see what I decide to do. But then I can hear how we'll react. It's usually a draw. Eleanor says it's cheating. She seemed relaxed, like the idea of fighting the hunter and her partner was the easiest part of this whole mess. It made my stomach twist and plunge. Should Archie stay with you then? I asked. If he's a better fighter than the others? Eleanor can hear all this, you know. She's offended, and also not thrilled with that idea. It's been a while since she was allowed to really brawl, no holds barred. She plans to keep me and my cheating ways out of this as much as possible. That made me feel a little bit better, which wasn't fair to Eleanor. I looked over my shoulder again, but I couldn't see her expression. Is she still following? I asked. Edith knew I wasn't talking about Eleanor. Yes. She won't attack the house, though. Not tonight. She turned off onto the invisible drive. Archie's headlights followed. We drove right up to the house. The lights inside were bright, but they didn't do much to light up the surrounding trees. The yard was still black. Eleanor had my door open before the truck was stopped. She pulled me out of the seat, ducked under my arm, threw her arm around my waist, then ran me through the front door with my feet a foot off the ground like I was a giant rag doll. She burst into the big white room with Edith and Archie on either side. All of them were there, already on their feet. Lauren stood in the middle of their circle. A low snarl rumbled in Eleanor's chest as she set me next to Edith. She's tracking us, Edith hissed, glaring at Lauren. Lauren's expression was unhappy. I was afraid of that. Archie darted to Jessamine's side and whispered in her ear. They flew up the stairs together. Royal watched them, then moved quickly to Eleanor's side. His eyes were intense and, when they flickered unwillingly to my face, hostile. What will she do? Corrine asked Lauren. I'm sorry, she answered. I was afraid, when your girl there defended him, that it would set Joss off. Can you stop her? Lauren shook her head. Nothing stops Joss when she gets started. We'll stop her, Eleanor promised. There was no doubt what she meant. You can't bring her down, Lauren answered. I've never seen anything like her in my 300 years. She's absolutely lethal. That's why I joined her coven. Her coven, I thought, of course. That whole show of leadership in the clearing was just that, A show. Lauren was shaking her head. She glanced at me, obviously confused. Are you sure this is all worth it? Edith's furious growl tore through the room. Lauren cringed away from her. Corrine looked at Lauren. I'm afraid you're going to have to make a choice. Lauren understood. She hesitated for a moment. She looked at every face, then at the bright room. I'm intrigued by the life you've created here, but I won't get in the middle of this. I bear none of you any enmity, but I won't go up against Joss. I think I will head north, to that clan in Denali. She paused. Don't underestimate Joss. She's got a brilliant mind and unparalleled senses. She looks wild, but she's every bit as comfortable in the human world as you seem to be. She won't come at you head on. I'm sorry for what's been unleashed here. Truly sorry. She bowed her head, but I saw her flicker another puzzled look at me. Go in peace, Corrine said. Lauren took one more long look around the room, and then she disappeared through the door. The silence lasted less than a second. Corrine looked at Edith. How close? Ernest was already moving. His hand touched a keypad on the wall, and with a groan, huge metal shutters began sealing up the glass wall. My mouth fell open. About 3 miles out past the river. She's circling around to meet up with the male. What's the plan? We lead her off. Then Archie and Jessamine will run him south. And then? Edith's voice turned icy. As soon as Bo is clear, we hunt her. I guess she's left us no other choice, Corrine agreed, her expression grim. Edith looked at Royal. Get him upstairs and trade clothes. Royal stared back at her, incredulous. And why would I do that? He asked. What is he to me? Roy, Eleanor murmured, putting one hand on his shoulder. He shook it off. My eyes were on Edith, worried that this would set off her temper, but she surprised me. She looked away from Royal like he hadn't spoken, like he didn't exist. Ernest? She asked calmly. Of course. As he was speaking, he was already at my side and ducking to grab me in a fireman's hold. We were up the stairs before I could register what was happening. What are we doing? I asked as he set me down in a dark room somewhere off the second-story hall. Trying to confuse the scent trail. It won't work for long, but it might give you a head start. His voice was muffled as he pulled his shirt over his head. I yanked my sweater off and held it out to him. He switched mine for his. I struggled to get my arms through the right holes, then yanked my jeans off. We traded. His pants were a little too short, but otherwise fit fine. He pulled me back to the hall. Ernest looked smaller in my clothes. He'd rolled the bottoms of my jeans. Archie was suddenly there. A leather satchel hung over his arm. They each grabbed one of my elbows and flew down the stairs. It looked like everything had been settled. Edith and Eleanor were ready to leave, Eleanor carrying a big backpack over her shoulder. Corrine handed something small to Ernest. She turned to Archie and handed him the same thing, a tiny silver cell phone. Ernest and Royal will be taking your truck, Bo, she told me as she passed. I nodded, glancing warily at Royal. He was glaring at Corrine, resentful. Archie, Jess, take the Mercedes. You'll need the dark tent in the south. They nodded. We'll take the Jeep. Corrine stopped next to Edith. I realized that this was the hunting party, and I felt like I was going to throw up. How did it get to this point? Why had they listened to my idea? It was obviously wrong. Archie, will they take the bait? Everyone watched Archie as he closed his eyes and became incredibly still. A few seconds later, his eyes opened again. She'll track you. The man will follow the truck. We'll be able to leave after that. He was positive. Let's go, Corrine said, heading for the kitchen. But Edith came back for me. She stared up at me, her gold eyes huge and deep, and full of a million words she didn't have time to say, and reached up to put her hands on my face. I leaned down, my hands already in her hair. For the shortest second, her lips were icy and hard against mine. Then it was over. She pushed my shoulders back. Her eyes went blank, dead, just before she turned away from me. They were gone. We stood there, no one looking at me while I stared after them. It felt like someone had ripped all the skin off my face. My eyes burned. The silent moment dragged. Archie's eyes were closed again. Then Ernest's phone vibrated in his hand, and Archie nodded once. The phone flashed to Ernest's ear. Now, Ernest said. Royal stalked out the front door without another glance in my direction, but Ernest touched my shoulder as he passed. Be safe. His whisper lingered behind them as they slipped out the door. I heard the truck start thunderously, and then the sound faded away. Jessamine and Archie waited. Then Archie lifted his phone to his ear just before it buzzed. Edith says the man is on Ernest's trail. I'll get the car. He vanished into the shadows the way Edith had gone. Jessamine and I looked at each other. She stood across the length of the entryway from me. You're wrong, you know, she said. Huh? I can feel what you're feeling now. And you are worth it. The feeling of being slowly skinned didn't let up. If anything happens to them, it will be for nothing, I whispered. She smiled kindly. You're wrong, she repeated. Archie stepped to the front door and walked straight toward me, one arm out. May I? He asked. You're the first one to ask permission, I mumbled. Archie slung me up into a fireman's carry like Ernest had, and with Jessamine shielding us protectively, flew out the door, leaving the lights on behind us. Chapter 20. Impatience. When I woke up, I was confused. It took me longer than it should have to remember where I was. The room was too bland to belong anywhere but a hotel. The bedside lamps were bolted to the tables, and the drapes were made from the same fabric as the bedspread. I tried to remember how I'd gotten to this room, but nothing came at first. I remembered the black car, the glass in the windows darker than that on a limousine. The engine was almost silent, though we'd raced across the black freeways at more than twice the legal limit. And I remembered Archie on the seat next to me, rather than up front with Jessamine. I remembered realizing suddenly that he was there as my bodyguard, that the front seat was apparently not close enough. It should have made the danger seem more real, but it all felt a million miles away. The danger I was in personally wasn't the danger I was worried about. I made Archie keep up a strange stream of consciousness future watch all night long. There weren't any details so small they didn't interest me. He told me turn by turn how Edith, Corrine, and Eleanor would be moving through the forest, and though I didn't know any of the landmarks he referenced, I'd been riveted by every word. And then he would go back and describe the same sequence differently, as some decision remapped the future. This happened over and over again, and it was impossible to follow, but I didn't care. As long as the future never put Edith and Joss in the same place, I'd been able to keep breathing. Sometimes he would switch to Ernest for me. Ernest and Royal were in my truck, heading east, which meant the red-haired man was still on their trail. Archie'd had a more difficult time seeing Charlie. Humans are harder than vampires, he told me. and I'd remembered that Edith had said something to me about that once. It had seemed like years ago, when it had been only days. I remembered being disoriented by the way I couldn't make sense of the time. I remembered the sun coming up over a low peak somewhere in California. The light had stung my eyes, but I'd tried not to close them. When I did, the images that flashed behind my lids like still slides were too much. I'd rather my eyes burn than see them again. Charlie's broken expression, Edith's bared teeth, Royal's furious glare, the red eyes of the tracker staring at me, the dead look in Edith's eyes when she'd turned away from me. I kept my eyes open, and the sun moved across the sky. I remembered my head feeling heavy and light at the same time as we raced through a shallow mountain pass and the sun, behind us now, reflected off the tiled rooftops of my hometown. I hadn't had enough emotion left to be surprised that we'd made a 3-day journey in one. I'd stared blankly at the city laid out in front of us, realizing slowly that it was supposed to mean something to me. The scrubby creosote, the palm trees, the green golf course amoebas, the turquoise splotches of swimming pools, these were supposed to be familiar. I was supposed to feel like I was home. The shadows of the streetlights had slanted across the freeway with lines that were sharper than I remembered. So little darkness. There was no place to hide in these shadows. "Which way to the airport?" Jessamine had asked, the first time she'd spoken since we'd gotten in the car. "Stay on the I-10, I'd answered automatically. "We'll pass right by it." It had taken me a few seconds more to process the implications of her question. My brain was foggy with exhaustion. "Are we flying somewhere?" I'd asked Archie. I couldn't think of the plan. This didn't sound right, though. "No, but it's better to be close, just in case." I remembered starting the loop around Sky Harbor International, but not ending it. That must have been when my brain had finally crashed. Though, now that I'd chased the memories down, I did have a vague impression of leaving the car, the sun behind the horizon, my arm draped over Archie's shoulder, his arm dragging me along as I stumbled through the warm, dry shadows. I had no memory of this room. I looked at the digital clock on the nightstand. The red numbers claimed it was 3 o'clock. But there was no way to tell if that meant a.m. or p.m. No light showed around the edges of the thick curtains, but the room was bright with the light from the lamps. I rose stiffly and staggered to the window, pulling back the drapes. It was dark outside. 3 in the morning, then. The room looked out on a deserted section of the freeway and the new long-term parking garage for the airport. It made me feel better, by a very small amount, to be able to pinpoint time and place. I looked down. I was still wearing Ernest's shirt and 2 short pants. I looked around the room and was glad when I saw my duffel bag on top of the low dresser. A light tap on the door made me jump. "Can I come in?" Archie asked. I took a deep breath. "Sure." He walked in and looked me over. "You look like you could sleep longer." I shook my head. He darted silently to the window and pulled the curtains shut. "We'll need to stay inside," he told me. "Okay." My voice was hoarse. It cracked. "Thirsty?" he asked. I shrugged. "I'm okay. How about you?" He smiled. "Nothing unmanageable. I ordered some food for you. It's in the front room. Edith reminded me that you have to eat a lot more frequently than we do." I was instantly more alert. "She called?" "No." He watched my face fall. "It was before we left. She gave me lots of instructions. Come eat something." He was out of the room before I could protest that I wasn't hungry. I followed slowly behind him. There was a living room attached to the bedroom. A low buzz of voices was coming from the TV, Jessamine sat at the desk in the corner, her eyes on the TV, but no interest in her expression. Archie went to stand by her. He ran his hand over her honey-colored hair. "What's the latest?" I asked. "Ernest and Royal are back in Forks. The redhead gave up chasing them." I opened my mouth, but Archie was faster. "They're watching your father. The redhead won't get past them."
"What is he doing?"
"Working his way through town. Looking for you, as far as I can tell. He spent some time at the school." My eyes bulged.
"Did he hurt anyone?"
Archie shook his head. "They seem pretty committed to the hunt they already started."
"Edith?"
"Frustrated, it looks like. They turned on the tracker, but she was already running. She's kept going north. They're chasing her."
I stood there, not sure what to do. Edith was chasing Joss. Sure, she had Corrine and Eleanor with her, but Edith was the fastest.
"Eat something, Beau. Edith gets really difficult when she thinks her instructions aren't being followed to the letter." There was a tray on the coffee table with a couple of stainless steel covers over the plates on it. I couldn't think of anything to do besides follow Archie's order. I sat on the floor next to the table and pulled off the first plate cover. I didn't look at the food. I just grabbed something and started eating. I was probably hungry. We hadn't stopped for food during our drive. They were quiet and motionless while I ate. I stared at the TV, but I couldn't make sense of what was happening. Was it a news show? Was it an infomercial? I wasn't sure. I ate until the plates were empty. I didn't taste any of it. When there was nothing left to eat, I stared at the wall. All I could see was Edith in the forest, faster than a cheetah, faster than a bullet. It was obvious she would catch up with the tracker first. Lauren's words echoed in my head. "You can't bring her down. She's absolutely lethal." Suddenly, Jessamine was standing over me, closer than usual.
"Beau," she said in a soothing voice, "you have nothing to worry about. You are completely safe here."
"I know."
"Then why are you frightened?"
She sounded confused. She might feel my emotions, but she couldn't see the reasons behind them. "You heard what Lauren said. Joss is lethal. What if something goes wrong and they get separated? If anything happens, if Corrine or Eleanor, or Edith," my voice broke. "If that crazy redhead hurts Ernest, how do I live with myself when it's my fault? None of you should be risking your lives for—"
"Stop, Beau, stop," she interrupted,
her words pouring out so quickly they were hard to understand.
"You're worrying about all the wrong things, Beau. Trust me on this. None of us are in jeopardy. You are under enough strain as it is. Don't add to it with imaginary worries. Listen to me," she ordered.
I'd looked away.
"Our family is strong. Our only fear is losing you."
"But why should you—" Archie was there then, his arm around Jessamine's waist. "It's been almost a century that Edith's been alone. Now she's found you. You can't see the changes that we see, we who have been with her for so long. Do you think any of us want to look into her eyes for the next 100 years if she loses you?" My guilt started to ease. But even though the calm that spread over me felt totally natural, like it came from inside, I knew better.
"You know I'd do this anyway," Archie added. "Even if Edith hadn't asked me to."
"Why?" He grinned. It's hard to explain without sounding slightly schizophrenic. Time doesn't mean the same thing to me that it does to you, or Jess, or anyone else. Jessamine grinned and tweaked his ear. "So this won't make sense to you, but for me, it's like we've already been friends for a long time, Beau. The first second you became a part of Edith's life, for me it was like we'd already spent hundreds of hours together. We've laughed at Edith's overreactions together. We've annoyed Royal right out of the house together.
We stayed up all night talking with Kareen together. I stared and he shrugged. It's how I experience the world.
We're friends?
I asked, my voice full of wonder. Best friends, he told me. Someday. It was nice of my favorite sister, don't you think, to fall in love with my best friend? I guess I owe her one.
Huh,
was all I could think to say. Archie laughed. Jessamine rolled her eyes.
Thanks so much, Archie. I just got him calm.
No, I'm good, I promised. Archie could be lying to make me feel better, but either way it worked. It wasn't so bad if Archie wanted to help me too, if he wasn't just doing it for Edith.
So what do we do now? I asked.
We wait for something to change.
It was a very long day. We stayed in the room. Archie called down to the front desk and asked them to suspend our housekeeping service. The curtain stayed shut, the TV on, though no one watched it. At regular intervals, food was delivered for me. It was funny how I was suddenly comfortable with Archie. It was like his vision of our friendship, spoken out loud, had made it real. He sat in the chair next to the sofa where I sprawled and answered all the questions I'd been too nervous to ask before. Sometimes he'd answer them before I asked them. It was a little weird, but I figured that was how everyone else felt around Edith all the time.
Yes, he said, when I thought about asking him that. It's exactly the same. She tries hard not to be obnoxious about it.
He told me about waking up. I only remember one thing, but I'm not even sure it was a memory. I thought I remembered someone saying my name, calling me Archie. But maybe I was remembering something that hadn't happened yet. Seeing that someday someone would call me Archie. He smiled at my expression. I know it's a circular dilemma, isn't it?
The hair?
He ran a hand over his scalp, unself-conscious. The stubble was just long enough to see that his hair would have been dark brown, nearly black, like his eyebrows.
It was a rather extreme look for 1920. A little too early for me to have been a skinhead, thank heavens. My best guess is disease or bad behavior.
Bad behavior? I asked.
He shrugged. I might have been in prison.
You couldn't have been much older than me, I protested.
He steepled his fingers thoughtfully. I like to believe that if I was a criminal, I was both a mastermind and a prodigy.
Jessamine, back at the desk and mostly silent, laughed with me.
It wasn't confusing the way it probably should have been, Archie said, when I asked him what his first visions were like. It seemed normal. I knew what I was seeing hadn't happened. I think maybe I'd seen things before I was changed. Or maybe I just adapt quickly.
He smiled, already knowing the question I had waiting.
It was Jess. She was the first thing I saw.
And then?
No, I didn't actually meet her in person until much later.
Something about his tone made me wonder.
How long?
28 years.
28? You had to wait 28 years? But couldn't you...
He nodded.
I could have found her earlier. I knew where she was, but she wasn't ready for me yet. If I'd come too early, she would have killed me.
I gasped and stared at her.
She raised an eyebrow at me, and I looked back at Archie. He laughed.
But Edith said you were the only one who could hold your own against her.
Jessamine hissed. Not like she was mad, like she was annoyed. I glanced at her again, and she was rolling her eyes.
We'll never know, Archie said, if Jess was really trying to kill Edith rather than just playing.
Well, Jess has a lot of experience. Seeing the future isn't the only reason why I can keep up with Edith. It's also because it was Jess who taught me how to fight. Lawrence Coven all had their eyes on Eleanor. She's pretty spectacular, I grant you. But if it had come to a fight, Eleanor wouldn't have been their problem. If they'd taken a closer look at my darling, He blew her a kiss. They would have forgotten all about the strong girl. I remember the first time I'd seen Jessamine, in the cafeteria with her family. Beautiful like the others, but with that edge. Even before I'd put it into words inside my own head, I'd sensed there was something about her that matched up with what Archie was telling me now. I looked at Archie.
You can ask her, he said, but it's not going to happen.
He wants to know my story? Jessamine guessed. She laughed once. It was a dark sound. You're not ready for that, Beau. Believe me. And though I was still curious, I did believe her.
You said humans were harder, but you seem to see me pretty well, I noted.
I'm paying attention, and you're right here, Archie said. Also, the 2-second head starts are simpler than the weather. It's the long term that won't hold still. Even an hour complicates things. Archie kept me updated on what was happening with the others, which was mostly nothing. Joss was good at running away. There were tricks, Archie told me. Sense couldn't be tracked through water, for example. Joss seemed to know the tricks. A half dozen times the trail took them back toward Forks, only to race off in the other direction again. Twice Archie called Corrine to give her instructions. Once it was something about the direction in which Joss had jumped off a cliff. The other time it was where they would find her scent on the other side of a river. From the way he described it, he wasn't seeing the hunter. He was seeing Edith and Corrine. I guessed he would see his family the most clearly. I wanted to ask for the phone, but I knew there wasn't time for me to hear Edith's voice. They were hunting. I also knew I was supposed to be rooting for Edith and the others to succeed, but I could only feel relieved as the distance between her and Joss got larger, despite Archie's help. If it meant I would be stuck here in this hotel room forever, I wouldn't complain. Whatever kept her safe. There was one question that I wanted to ask more than the others, but I hesitated. I think if Jessamine hadn't been there, I might have done it sooner. I didn't feel the same ease in her presence that I did now with Archie, which was probably only because she wasn't trying to make me feel that way. When I was eating dinner? Maybe. I couldn't remember which meal I was on. I was thinking about different ways to ask. And then I caught a look on Archie's face, and I knew that he already knew what I was trying to ask, and unlike my dozens of other questions, he was choosing not to answer this one. My eyes narrowed. Was this on Edith's list of instructions? I asked sourly. I thought I heard a very faint sigh from Jessamine's corner. It was probably annoying listening to half a conversation, but she should be used to that. I'd bet Edith and Archie never had to speak out loud at all when they talked to each other. It was implied, Archie answered. I thought about their fight in the Jeep. Was this what it was about? I don't suppose our future friendship is enough to shift your loyalties? He frowned. Edith is my sister. Even if you disagree with her on this? We stared at each other for a minute. That's what you saw, I realized. I felt my eyes get bigger. And then she got so upset. You already saw it, didn't you? It was only one future among many. I also saw you die, he reminded me. But you saw it. It's a possibility. He shrugged. Don't you think I deserve to know then? Even if there's only the slightest chance? He stared at me, deliberating. You do, he finally said. You have the right to know. I waited. You don't know fury like Edith when she's thwarted, he warned me. It's none of her business. This is between you and me. As your friend, I'm begging you. He paused, then made his choice. I can tell you the mechanics of it, but I don't remember it myself. And I've never done it or seen it done, so keep in mind that I can only tell you the theory. How does someone become a vampire? Oh, is that all? Jessamine muttered behind me. I'd forgotten she was listening. I waited. As predators, Archie began, we have a glut of weapons in our physical arsenal. Much, much more than we need for hunting easy prey like humans. Strength, speed, acute senses, not to mention those of us like Edith, Jessamine, and me who have extra senses as well. And then, like a carnivorous flower, we are physically attractive to our prey. I was singing it all in my head again, how Edith had illustrated the same concept for me in the meadow. He smiled wide. His teeth glistened. We have one more, fairly superfluous weapon. We're also venomous. The venom doesn't kill. It's merely incapacitating. It works slowly, spreading through the bloodstream, so that, once bitten, our prey is in too much physical pain to escape us. Mostly superfluous, as I said. If we're that close, our prey doesn't escape. Of course, unless we want it to. Corrine, I said quietly. The holes in the story Edith had told me were filling themselves in. So, if the venom is left to spread, it takes a few days for the transformation to be complete, depending on how much venom is in the bloodstream, how close the venom enters to the heart. Corrine's creator bit her on the hand on purpose to make it worse. As long as the heart keeps beating, the poison spreads, healing, changing the body as it moves through it. Eventually the heart stops, and the conversion is finished. But all that time, every minute of it, a victim would be wishing for death, screaming for it. I shuddered. It's not pleasant, no. Edith said it was very hard to do, but that sounds simple enough. We're also like sharks in a way. Once we taste blood, or even smell it for that matter, it becomes very hard to keep from feeding. Impossible, even. So you see, to actually bite someone, to taste the blood, it would begin the frenzy. It's difficult on both sides. The bloodlust on the one hand, the awful pain on the other. It sounds like something you would remember, I said. For everyone else, the pain of transformation is the sharpest memory they have of their human life. I don't know why I'm different. Archie stared past me, motionless. I wondered what it would be like not to know who you were. To look in the mirror and not recognize the person looking back. It was hard for me to believe that Archie could have been a criminal, though. There was something intrinsically good about his face. Royal was the showy one, the one the girls at school stared at. But there was something better than perfection about Archie's face. It was totally pure. There are positives to being different, Archie said suddenly. I don't remember anyone I left behind. I got to skip that pain, too. He looked at me, and his eyes narrowed a little bit. Corrine, Edith, and Ernest all lost everyone who mattered to them before they left being human behind. So there was grief, but not regret. It was different for the others. The physical pain is a quick thing, comparatively, Beau. There are slower ways to suffer. Royal had parents who loved him and depended on him, two little sisters he adored. He could never see them again after he was changed. And then he outlived them all. That kind of pain is very, very slow. I wondered if he was trying to make me feel bad for Royal, to cut the guy some slack, even if he hated me. Well, it was working. He shook his head, like he knew I wasn't getting it. That's part of the process, Beau. I haven't experienced it. I can't tell you what it feels like, but it's a part of the process. And then I understood what he was telling me. He was perfectly still again. I put my arm behind my head and stared up at the ceiling. If ever someday Edith wanted me that way, what would that mean for Mom? What would that mean for Charlie? There were so many things to think about. Things I didn't even know I didn't know to think about. But some things seemed obvious. For whatever reason, Edith didn't want me thinking about any of this. Why? It hurt my stomach when I tried to come up with an answer to that question. Then Archie sprang to his feet. I looked up at him, startled by the sudden movement, then alarmed again when I saw his face. It was totally blank, empty, his mouth half open. Then Jessamine was there, gently pushing him back into the chair.
"What do you see?"
she asked in a low, soothing voice. "Something's changed," Archie said, even more quietly. I leaned closer.
"What is it?"
"A room. It's long. There are mirrors everywhere. The floor is wood. The tracker is in the room, and she's waiting. There's a gold stripe across the mirrors."
"Where is the room?"
"I don't know. Something is missing. Another decision hasn't been made yet."
"How much time?"
"It's soon. She'll be in the mirror room today, or maybe tomorrow. It all depends. She's waiting for something." His face went blank again. "And she's in the dark now." Jessamine's voice was calm, methodical.
"What is she doing?"
"She's watching TV. No, she's running a VCR, in the dark, in another place."
"Can you see where she is?"
"No, the space is too dark."
"And the mirror room, what else is there?"
"Just the mirrors and the gold. It's a band around the room, and there's a black table with a big stereo and a TV. She's touching the VCR there, but she doesn't watch the way she does in the dark room. This is the room where she waits." His eyes drifted, then focused on Jessamine's face.
"There's nothing else?"
He shook his head. They looked at each other, motionless.
"What does it mean?"
I asked. Neither of them answered for a moment. Then Jessamine looked at me.
"It means the tracker's plans have changed. She's made a decision that will lead her to the mirror room and the dark room."
"But we don't know where those rooms are?"
"No.
But we do know that she won't be in the mountains north of Washington, being hunted. She'll elude them." Archie's voice was bleak. He picked up the phone just as it vibrated. "Corrine?" he said, and then he glanced at me.
"Yes."
He listened for another long moment, then said,
"I just saw her."
He described the vision like he had for Jessamine. Whatever made her take that plane, it was leading her to those rooms. He paused.
"Yes."
He held out the phone to me.
"Beau?"
I yanked it out of his hand. "Hello?"
"Beau,"
Edith breathed.
"Oh, Edith," I said. "Where are you?"
"Outside of Vancouver. I'm sorry, Beau. We lost her. She seems suspicious of us. She stays just far enough away that I can't hear her. She's gone now. Looks like she stole a small plane. We think she's heading back to Forks to start over."
I could hear Archie filling Jessamine in behind me.
"I know. Archie saw that she got away. You don't have to worry, though. You've left no trail for her to follow. You just have to stay with Archie and wait till we find her again. Archie will get a bead on her soon enough."
"I'll be fine. Is Ernest with Charlie?"
"Yes. The mail's been in town. He went to the house, but while Charlie was at work. He hasn't gone near your father. Don't worry. Charlie's safe with Ernest and Royal watching."
Somehow, Royal's presence didn't comfort me much.
"What do you think Victor is doing?"
"Trying to pick up the trail. He's been all through the area during the night. Royal traced him up to the airport in Port Angeles. All the roads around town, the school. He's digging, Beau, but there's nothing to find."
"And you're sure Charlie's safe?"
"Yes. Ernest won't let him out of his sight. I'll be there soon. If the tracker gets anywhere near Forks,
I'll have her. I swallowed. Be careful. Stay with Corrine and Eleanor. I know what I'm doing. I miss you, I said. I know, believe me, I know. It's like you've taken half of myself away with you. Come and get it, then. As soon as I possibly can. I will make this right first. Her voice got hard. I love you. Could you believe that, despite everything I've put you through, I love you too? Yes, I can. I'll come for you soon. I'll wait for you. The phone went dead, and a sudden wave of depression crashed over me. Jessamine looked up sharply, and the feeling dissipated. Jessamine went back to watching Archie. He was on the couch, leaning over the table with the free hotel pen in his hand. I walked over to see what he was doing. He was sketching on a piece of hotel stationery. I leaned on the back of the couch, looking over his shoulder. He drew a room, long, rectangular, with a thinner, square section at the back. He drew lines to show how the wooden planks that made up the floor stretched lengthwise across the room. Down the walls were more lines denoting the breaks in the mirrors. I hadn't been picturing them like that, covering the whole wall that way. And then, wrapping around the walls, waist high, a long band. The band Archie said was gold. It's a ballet studio, I said, suddenly recognizing the familiar shapes. They both looked up at me, surprised. Do you know this room? Jessamine's voice sounded calm, but there was an undercurrent to it. Archie leaned closer to the paper, his hand flying across the page now. An emergency exit took shape against the back wall just where I knew it would be. The stereo and TV filled in the right corner foreground. It looks like a place where my mom used to teach dance lessons. She didn't stick with it for very long. It was shaped just the same. I touched the page where the square section jutted out, narrowing the back part of the room. That's where the bathrooms were. The doors were through the other dance floor. But the stereo was here. I pointed to the left corner. It was older, and there wasn't a TV. There was a window in the waiting room. You could see the room from this perspective if you looked through it. Archie and Jessamine were staring at me. Are you sure it's the same room? Jessamine asked with the same unnatural calm. No, not at all. I mean, most dance studios would look the same. The mirrors, the bar. I leaned over the couch and traced my finger along the ballet bar set against the mirrors. It's just the shape that looked familiar. Would you have any reason to go there now? Archie asked. No, I haven't been back since my mom quit. It's probably been 10 years. So there's no way it could be connected with you? Archie asked intently. I shook my head. I don't even think the same person owns it. I'm sure it's just another dance studio somewhere else. Where was the studio your mother went to? Jessamine asked, her voice much more casual than Archie's. Just around the corner from our house. It's why she took the job, so I could meet her there when I walked home from school. My voice trailed off as I watched the look they exchanged. Here in Phoenix, then? She asked, still casual. Yes, I whispered. 58th and Cactus. We all stared in silence at the drawing. Archie, is that phone safe? I asked. The number just traces back to Washington, he told me. Then I can use it to call my mom. She's in Florida, right? She should be safe there. She is, but she's coming home soon, and she can't come back to that house while... A tremor ran through my voice. I was thinking about Victor searching Charlie's house, the school in Forks where my records were. What's her number? Archie asked. He had the phone in his hand. They don't have a permanent number except at the house. She's supposed to check her messages regularly. Jess? Archie asked. She thought about it. I don't think it could hurt. Don't say where you are, obviously. I nodded, reaching for the phone. I dialed the familiar number, then waited through four rings until my mother's breezy voice came on, telling me to leave a message. Mom, I said after the beep. It's me. Listen, I need you to do something. It's important. As soon as you get this message, call me at this number. Archie pointed to the number already written on the bottom of his picture. I read it carefully, twice. Please don't go anywhere until you talk to me. Don't worry, I'm okay, but I have to talk to you right away, no matter how late you get this call, all right? I love you, Mom. Bye. I closed my eyes and prayed that no unforeseen change of plans would bring her home before she got my message. Then we were back to waiting. I thought about calling Charlie, but I wasn't sure what I could say. I watched the news, concentrating now, watching for stories about Florida or about spring training, strikes or hurricanes or terrorist attacks, anything that might send them home early. It seemed like immortality granted endless patience, too. Neither Jessamine nor Archie seemed to feel the need to do anything at all. For a while, Archie sketched the vague outline of the dark room from his vision, as much as he could see in the light from the TV. But when he was done, he simply sat, looking at the blank walls. Jessamine, too, seemed to have no urge to pace, or to peek through the curtains, or to punch holes in the wall the way I did. I fell asleep on the couch, waiting for the phone to ring. Chapter 21 Phone Call. When I woke up, I knew it was too early. I was getting my days and nights reversed. The TV was on, the only light in the room, but the sound was muted. The clock on the TV said it was just after 2 a.m. I could hear the sound of quiet voices speaking too quickly, and I figured that was what had woken me. I lay still on the couch for a minute, waiting for my eyes and ears to adjust. I realized that it was strange that they were talking loud enough to wake me, and I sat up. Archie was leaning over the desk, Jessamine next to him with her hand on his back. He was sketching again. I got up and walked over to them. Neither one of them looked up, too engrossed in Archie's work. I went around to Archie's other side to see. He saw something else, I said quietly to Jessamine. Some things brought the tracker back to the room with the VCR, but it's light now, she answered. I watched as Archie drew a square room with dark beams across its low ceiling. The walls were paneled in wood, a little too dark, out of date. The floor had a dark carpet with a pattern in it. There was a large window against the south wall, and an opening through the west wall led to the living room. One side of that entrance was stone, a large tan stone fireplace that was open to both rooms. The focus of the room from this perspective, the TV and VCR, balanced on a too small wooden stand, were in the southwest corner of the room. An old sectional sofa curved around in front of the TV, a round coffee table in front of it. The phone goes there, I whispered, pointing. They both stared at me. That's my mom's house. Archie was across the room, phone in hand, dialing. I stared at the faithful rendering of my family room. Uncharacteristically, Jessamine slid closer to me. She lightly touched her hand on my shoulder, and the physical contact seemed to make her calming influence stronger. The panic stayed dull, unfocused. Archie's lips blurred. He was talking so fast. His voice was just a low buzzing, impossible to understand. Bo, he said. I looked at him numbly. Bo, Edith is coming. She and Eleanor and Corrine are going to take you somewhere, hide you for a while. Edith is coming? Yes, she's catching the first flight out of Seattle. We'll meet her at the airport, and you'll leave with her. But my mom. She came here for my mom, Archie. Even with Jessamine touching me, I could feel the panic seizing up my chest. Jess and I will stay till she's safe again. We can't win, Archie. You can't guard everyone I know forever. Don't you see what she's doing? She's not even tracking me. She'll find someone. She'll hurt someone I love. Archie, I can't. We'll catch her, Beau. And what if you get hurt, Archie? Do you think that's okay with me? Do you think it's only my human family she can hurt me with? Archie raised his eyebrows at Jessamine. A heavy fog of exhaustion washed over me, and my eyes closed without my permission. I struggled against the fog, knowing what was happening. I forced my eyes open and stepped away from Jessamine's hand. I don't need sleep, I snapped. I went back to the bedroom, slamming the door behind me. Archie didn't follow me the way I half expected him to. Maybe he could see what his reception would be. For almost 4 hours, I sat on the floor and stared at the wall, my hands clenched into fists. My mind went around in circles, trying to come up with some way out of this nightmare. I couldn't see any escape. Just one possible end. The only question was how many other people would get hurt before I reached it. The only hope I had left was knowing that I would see Edith soon. Maybe, if I could see her face again, I would be able to see a solution, too. Things were always clearer when we were together. When the phone rang, I went back to the front room, a little ashamed of my behavior. I hoped I hadn't offended anyone. I hoped they realized that I was nothing but grateful for the sacrifices they were making for me. Archie was talking at high speed into the phone again. I looked around, but Jessamine was gone. The clock said it was 5:30 in the morning. They're just boarding their plane, Archie told me. They'll land at 9:45. Just a few more hours to keep myself together till she was here. Where's Jessamine? She went to check out. You aren't staying here? No, we're relocating closer to your mother's house. I felt like I wanted to throw up, but then the phone rang again. Archie looked at the number, then held it out to me. I yanked it from his hand. Mom? Beau? Beau? It was my mom's voice, that familiar tone I'd heard 1,000 times in my childhood, anytime I'd gotten too close to the edge of the sidewalk or straight out of her sight in a crowded place. It was the sound of panic. Calm down, Mom, I said in my most soothing voice, walking slowly away from Archie back to the bedroom. I wasn't sure if I could lie convincingly with him watching. Everything's fine, okay? Just give me a minute and I'll explain everything, I promise. I paused, surprised that she hadn't interrupted me yet. Mom? Be very careful not to say anything until I tell you to. The voice I heard now was as unfamiliar as it was unexpected. It was a woman's voice, but not my mom's. It was a soft alto voice, a very pleasant, generic voice, the kind of voice that you heard in the background of luxury car commercials. She spoke quickly. Now, I don't need to hurt your mother, so please do exactly as I say, and she'll be fine. She paused for a minute while I listened in mute horror. That's very good, she congratulated. Now repeat after me, and do try to sound natural. Please say, No, Mom, stay where you are. No, Mom, stay where you are. My voice was barely more than a whisper. I can see this is going to be difficult. The voice was amused, still light and friendly. Why don't you walk into another room now so your face doesn't ruin everything? There's no reason for your mother to suffer. As you're walking, say, Mom, please listen to me. Say it now. Mom, please listen to me, I pleaded. I walked slowly through the bedroom door, feeling Archie's worried stare on my back. I shut the door behind me, trying to think clearly through the terror that immobilized my brain. There now, are you alone? Just answer yes or no.
Yes.
But they can still hear you, I'm sure.
Yes.
All right, then, the agreeable voice continued. Say, Mom, trust me.
Mom, trust me.
This worked out rather better than I expected. I was prepared to wait, but your mother arrived ahead of schedule. It's easier this way, isn't it? Less suspense, less anxiety for you.
I waited.
Now I want you to listen very carefully. I'm going to need you to get away from your friends. Do you think you can do that?
Answer yes or no.
No. I'm sorry to hear that. I was hoping you would be a little more creative. Do you think you could get away from them if your mother's life depended on it?
Answer yes or no.
Somehow there had to be a way.
Yes, I said through my teeth.
Very good, Beau. Now this is what you have to do. I want you to go to your mother's house. Next to the phone, there will be a number. Call it, and I'll tell you where to go from there.
I already knew where I would go and where this would end, but I would follow her instructions exactly.
Can you do that? Answer yes or no.
Yes.
Before noon, please, Beau. I haven't got all day, she said.
Where's Phil? I hissed.
Ah, be careful now, Beau. Wait until I ask you to speak, please.
I waited.
It's important that you don't make your friends suspicious when you go back to them. Tell them that your mother called and that you talked her out of coming home for the time being. Now repeat after me. Thank you, Mom. Say it now.
Thank you, Mom. It was hard to understand the words. My throat was closing up.
Say, I love you, Mom. I'll see you soon. Say it now.
I love you, Mom. I choked out. I'll see you soon. I promised.
Goodbye, Beau. I look forward to seeing you again.
She hung up. I held the phone to my ear. My joints were frozen with horror. I couldn't unbend my fingers to drop it. I knew I had to think, but my head was filled with the sound of my mother's panic. Seconds ticked by while I fought for control. Slowly, my thoughts started to break past that brick wall of pain. To plan. Because I had no choices now but one. To go to the mirrored room and die. I had no guarantees that doing what she wanted would keep my mother alive. I could only hope that Joss would be satisfied with winning the game, that beating Edith would be enough. Despair was like a noose pulling tight around my neck. There was no way to bargain, nothing I could offer or withhold that would influence her. But I still had no choice. I had to try. I pushed the terror back as well as I could. My decision was made. It did no good to waste time agonizing over it. I had to think clearly, because Archie and Jessamine were waiting for me, and deceiving them was absolutely essential, and absolutely impossible. I was suddenly grateful that Jessamine was gone. If she had been here to feel my anguish in the last 5 minutes, how could I have kept them in the dark? I fought back the fear, the horror, tried to force a lid on it all. I couldn't afford to feel now. I didn't know when she would be back. I tried to concentrate on my escape, then immediately realized that I couldn't plan anything. I had to be undecided. No doubt Archie would see the change soon, if he hadn't already. I couldn't let him see how it happened, if it happened. How could I get away? Especially when I couldn't even think about it. I wanted to go see what Archie had made of all this, if he'd seen any changes yet. But I knew I had to deal with one more thing alone before Jessamine got back. I had to accept that I would never see Edith again. Not even one last look at her face to take with me to the mirror room. I was going to hurt her, and I couldn't say goodbye. It was like being tortured. I burned in it for a minute,
let it break me. And then I had to pull my shell together to go face Archie. The only expression I could manage was a blank, dead look, but I felt like that was understandable. I walked into the living room, my script ready to go. Archie was bent over the desk, gripping the edge with two hands. His face... At first the panic broke through the mask, and I jumped around the couch to get to him. While I was still in motion, I realized what he must be seeing. It brought me up short a few feet away from him. "Archie," I said dully. He didn't react when I called his name. His head rocked slowly from side to side. His expression brought the panic back again. Maybe this wasn't about me. Maybe he was watching my mother. I took another step forward, reaching out to touch his arm. "Archie!" Jessamine's voice whipped from the door, and then she was right behind Archie, her hands curling over his, loosening them from their grip on the table. Across the room, the door swung shut with a low click. "What is it?" she demanded. "What did you see?" He turned his empty face away from me, looking blindly into Jessamine's eyes. "Bo," he said. "I'm right here." His head twisted, his eyes locked on mine, their expressions still blank. I realized that he hadn't been speaking to me. He'd been answering Jessamine's question. Chapter 22. Hide and Seek. "What was it?" I'd lost control of my voice. It was flat, uncaring. Jessamine stared at me. I kept my expression vacant and waited. Her eyes flickered between Archie's face and mine, feeling the chaos. I knew what Archie had seen. A peaceful atmosphere settled around me. I didn't fight it. I used it to keep my emotions under control. Archie recovered too. His face snapped back to its normal expression. "Nothing," he said, his voice amazingly calm and convincing. "Just the same room as before." He looked at me, focusing for the first time. "Did you want breakfast?" "I'll eat at the airport." I was calm too. Almost like I was borrowing Jessamine's extra sense, I could feel Archie's well-concealed desperation to get me out of the room so that he could be alone with her. So he could tell her that they were doing something wrong, that they were going to fail. Archie was still focused on me. "Is your mother all right?" I had to swallow back a throatful of bile. I could only follow the script I had planned earlier. "My mom was worried," I said in a monotone voice. "She wanted to come home. It's okay," I convinced her to stay in Florida for now. "That's good." "Yes," I agreed robotically. I turned and walked slowly to the bedroom, feeling their eyes following the whole way. I shut the door behind me, and then I did what I could. I showered and got dressed in clothes that fit me. I dug through the duffel bag until I found my sock full of money. I emptied it into my pocket. I stood there for a minute, staring at nothing, trying to think of things I was allowed to think about. I came up with one idea. I knelt by the little bedside table and opened the top drawer. Underneath the complimentary copy of the Bible, there was a stash of stationery and a pen. I took a sheet of paper and an envelope out of the drawer. "Edith," I wrote. My hand was shaking. The letters were barely legible. "I love you. Sorry, again. So sorry. She has my mom, and I have to try. I know it may not work. I am so very, very sorry. Don't be mad at Archie and Jessamine. If I get away from them, it will be a miracle. Tell them thank you for me. Archie especially. And please, please don't come after her. That's what she wants. I can't stand it if anyone else has to be hurt because of me, especially you. Please. This is the only thing I can ask you now. For me. I'm not sorry that I met you.
I'll never be sorry that I love you. Forgive me. Beau. I folded the paper into thirds and then sealed it into the envelope. Eventually she would find it. I hope she would understand. I hope she would forgive. And most of all, I hoped she would listen. When I walked back out to the living room, they were ready. I sat alone this time in the back of the car. Jessamine kept shooting glances at me in the mirror when she thought I wouldn't notice. She kept me calm,